Welcome to the first episode of the 853 OKG podcast. I'm your host, Philip Sumner. This is a podcast or a blogcast about the 1970s detective show, The Rockford Files, which ran on NBC from 1974 until 1980. So why did I decide to do a Rockford Files podcast? Well, there is a great Rockford Files podcast already available to you right now. It's called $200 a Day. And if you haven't listened to it, you totally should. Nathan and Epidiah are the hosts of the show, and they're really good at breaking down the story and the script and the arc of the story and all that sort of stuff, which is not really my wheelhouse. I've always been interested in the production side of things. I'm going to talk pretty heavily about the people, places, and things that you see on screen during every episode. So, you know, there's great guest stars, so many great guest stars that you'll recognize. If you've watched television at all during the 1970s or 80s, you'll recognize a lot of these people from other things. And Los Angeles itself, which is a great, it's really almost another character in the show. All the locations around Los Angeles, even when they're not supposed to be locations in Los Angeles, that are featured in the show. And we're going to dig into where those are and talk about those a little bit. And of course, the cars. Everybody wants to know about these really cool cars that you see, not just featured characters or guest stars cars or Rockford's famous Pontiac, but just the cars that are in the show, even in the background. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of those. And that's really what this podcast is all about. Like James Garner, I am an Okie by birth. He was able to escape. I was not. But I am sort of an Angeleno at heart. When I was a kid, my dad worked for American Airlines. And so we took a lot of trips out to California to visit family. We had a lot of family out there that were Okies who kind of took a Steinbeck-style trip out west during the Great Depression. So there was a little gaggle of us that were living out there in California, and we would go out and visit them. So Southern California has always been like a place that I've loved, gone to many, many times. My wife and I still go there pretty regularly, Los Angeles, Malibu, Santa Monica. And so to me, that's it's a very big part of the show. When you're watching it, just the things you see and the places you see in the show. And we're going to talk a lot about that sort of thing. That's really the LA that I first fell in love with when I was a kid. Not just from seeing it when we would go on trips, but watching shows like The Rockford Files or Adam 12 or Emergency. Those are all great shows from that era that have great Los Angeles locations in them. As I said, though, we're going to start at the beginning with the pilot episode, which was actually a backdoor pilot. It was a TV movie called Backlash of the Hunter that aired on NBC in March 27th of 1974. That was a Wednesday night, if you're scoring at home. And if you are scoring at home, congratulations. So that evening, to give you a little bit of context about that date, March 27th, 1974, Richard Nixon was still president for a few months until things went south. During this time slot that this aired that evening, ABC showed a show called The Cowboys, which I'm not familiar with. And then they followed that up with their own TV movie called Female Artillery, which starred Dennis Weaver, who's great, and Linda Evans, who everybody loves. I feel like I should probably try to find that. I doubt it's available. Over on CBS, they were showing Sonny and Cher during the first hour, and then the detective drama Cannon during the second hour of the Rockford TV movie. So a little bit of context about the popular culture and what was going on at the time. But enough of the buildup. Let's discuss the pilot episodes, plural, of The Rockford Files, Backlash of the Hunter. It's sometimes called Season 1, Episode 0. That's kind of what I'm calling it. It's a backdoor pilot. It wasn't necessarily intended to be a pilot, but it also kind of probably was. That's kind of the way they did things in the 70s. And even in the 80s, you'd have a TV movie with a lot of hope and a lot of promise. And then if it did well, people think, you know what? Okay, well, let's order some episodes of this. So it was a 2-hour TV movie in syndication and now via streaming or DVD. It's split up into two episodes, or 2 1-hour, quote unquote episodes. So the first thing I noticed when I'm watching Backlash of the Hunter is the sensibility of the 1970s television viewer. I think it was much different than today. By that, I mean the pacing of the early scenes was kind of slow, not in a bad way, but they really kind of took time setting up the story, particularly the murder of Harry Butler, which is what kicks this whole thing off. There's a lot of scenes of him, getting on the bus, sitting on the bus driving through town, and then Jerry Grimes, played by William Smith, following him in that beautiful 1974 Cadillac. I believe it's a Fleetwood Eldorado convertible, red, fantastic looking automobile. But there's a lot of scenes of him following him all the way down to the Santa Monica Pier. And then there's, I believe, a good 30 or 45 seconds of nothing but shots of the old man's feet walking slowly, and then Jerry Grimes' feet walking slowly, first one direction, then another direction. I swear it goes on for nearly a minute before Harry Grimes finally settles in at the underneath the Santa Monica Pier, takes a swig, and then is immediately strangled to death by Jerry Grimes. But to me, I think that's just kind of the way that shows operate. I mean, obviously this was a 2-hour program originally. They had a lot more breathing room than you have in just a 1-hour show. But this is something I've noticed watching other shows from my childhood in recent months. I recently stumbled across The $6 Million Man, The Bionic Woman, and The Greatest American Hero on one of the streaming services. It might have been Tubi, I'm not sure. And I watched the first episode of all of those. And it's very similar in pace. Very slow to get going. A lot of setup, a lot of very slow setup in the beginning, which is fine. And, I just feel like that's something that has changed at some point. I don't know why. It's not better, it's not worse, it's just different. But I wonder when that changed. When did we decide, as viewers, we needed things to move more quickly? Or did we even decide? Was it something that Hollywood just started doing? We need to make these things faster. We need things to happen faster. I don't know. But that's a whole other show. Back to the whole reason that I'm doing this podcast, this particular episode, the show. I mentioned Bionic Woman, and that kind of brings me to the guest star, or at least the main guest star, featured guest star, Lindsay Wagner. When I was a kid, I loved The Bionic Woman. It was a great show. I also love The $6 Million Man, obviously. She just has such a carefree way about her on screen. She's just, and maybe because I know her later work, she just has such a nice, familiar persona that kind of makes you want to root for her or her character. And then that does kind of come through, especially after you meet her. Once you get past the initial scenes with her in Rockford, you kind of like this girl, and that's good because you want to have that feeling about this character. And I think she did a good job with that. Her character is called Sarah Butler. She hires Jim Rockford to find out who killed her father. Well, we already know who killed her father, by the time we see her or Jim Rockford on screen. But she wants him to find out because the police have, just not figured it out. They don't know who killed him. They have no clues. They have no leads, really nothing. So, she comes, a Dennis at the police, who will later become obviously a character, a friend of Rockford who works for the police, the Los Angeles Police Department, says, hey, this guy works on closed cases. Maybe you can get him to look into it for you. So she owns a bikini shop in what I believe to be either Sherman Oaks or Studio City. Just from the way it looks, I couldn't find anything in the footage of the exterior when Rockford left the bikini shop where it actually was. It just looks to me like Sherman Oaks, just from having been in Sherman Oaks. It could have been any of the identical surrounding smaller parts of Los Angeles, retail, just a long retail strip or whatever. But I feel like that's where it's, if you know where it is, you can tweet us on the show at 853-OKG-Podcast and tell me. But I couldn't find any identifying landmark in that exterior shot to help me find exactly where it was. Which, by the way, that kills me because I want to find the exact spot for almost every outdoor location in the show. And I have to like restrain myself when I'm watching an episode of this or any show from that era of, you know, just digging into Google Maps and just trying to find something on the screen that shows a street name or a business name that I can Google and try to find the location of. And I get nothing on this one. I'm really, there was one little tiny sign that I could see the name, but nothing on the internet provided any address or any real proof. And it could have been a fake, it could have been a fake sign, but it was so small and out of the way, I don't think it was. In any event, Jim sort of, he's immediately suspicious of her because she didn't balk, first of all, at his $200 a day plus expenses line. You know, she whips out her checkbook and says, I can afford a lot more, you know, people like you. Which is weird because the script, which is available online, Stephen J. Cannell's original script is available actually on his website, although I think he's deceased now. His family's put up a website with a lot of scripts of all the TV shows he worked on and has the pilot episode on there. And the script, it actually says, she says something more like, I can afford a lot more little people like you, which they took out in the final version, which I think is probably better. I think that may have come off a little too harsh. So they changed it. And I think it plays a lot better the way it was filmed. In any event, Jim kind of surreptitiously runs a credit check on her and finds out, as he later tells her, she may be the only person in town that has worse credit than him, which is kind of funny because that's a whole thing that kind of sets up his character for the whole series. He's always maybe one bill behind or 1 month behind on everything. And that's kind of funny. It is a great line. So he does start working for her, and then we meet her brother, Nick, who's played by Bill Mumy, a child actor and a musician later in life. His character works at a pharmacy, and he's going to medical school thanks to this older woman who has taken an interest in him, which seems a little sketchy, which I think Sarah, Lindsay Wagner, also kind of thought. That woman turns out to be Mildred Elias, who's played by the amazing Nita Talbot, she's been in a lot of stuff back in those days and even early. She was in Hogan's Heroes a few episodes with a German accent. Mannix, so many shows from the 70s all the way through the 90s. Mildred, we find out, is kind of the sugar mama of Jerry Grimes, who we saw murder Sarah Butler's father in the beginning. Jerry is played by William Smith, and he was a child actor. A lot of these people are child actors. They start out in the 1940s. His IMDb, he goes from the 1940s until like 2014. His IMDb is as long as, I don't know, something that's really long. He plays a really good heavy, which I think is probably after his childhood days of acting, probably about 90% of what he does. And he's really good at it. Rockford calls him Big Dumb Ape in this show. And it is kind of dumb to be a guy who drives this bitchin' red 1974 Cadillac Fleetwood Eldorado convertible around town when you're trying to follow someone and not let them know you're following them, which Jerry apparently likes to do. We see him doing it to the bus, which is, you know, the bus driver doesn't care. But he's also trying to follow Rockford, a private investigator who's probably, you know, maybe used to someone trying to follow him because he's probably followed people himself. So doesn't seem super bright in that way. Soon, though, Rockford decides to visit Mildred, mainly because Sarah thought it was weird. I don't necessarily know if she knew there was a connection between Talbot. I'm sorry, Nita Talbot, the character Mildred, and possibly her father. I don't know how she would have known that, but she thought it was weird. So Jim looks into it. He actually poses as a admissions officer for a medical school and goes and visits her. This beautiful modern house up in the hills overlooking Los Angeles. It's in West, just above Westwood in the hills, just up the hill from UCLA. Unfortunately, though, they tore that house down a few years ago, and they put up, I believe, a $500 million mega mansion on the same spot, which is, that killed me because I'm a sucker for mid-century modern homes, and that house was really, really cool, and the pool and the view, obviously the view is still there, but I just, I don't know why you need to tear down a house like that and put up a monstrosity, but they did it. So Jim does a little bit of digging to kind of see if there's enough of a case for it to even be worth the money for Sarah. Cause I mean, she's obviously short on funds. You know, Rockford is obviously concerned that she can't pay him, so he doesn't want to put in a bunch of work. So he decides to do a little bit of digging and see where the case goes. So he goes to visit his old buddy, Angel, who's a prison buddy of his, who's apparently working for his brother-in-law at a newspaper, I think. Like in the archive room or something of the newspaper. There's a bunch of newspaper clippings in a bunch of file folder, file cabinets. I'm not sure if that's how it was actually done, but, you know, probably so during those days. Of course, Angel's played by Stuart Margolin, who's fantastic in the show, not just this episode. He's barely in this episode, but he's a big part of the show over the years and was always one of my favorite characters during the original run of the show. And I haven't actually heard him speak in years, but... And obviously, as a kid, I didn't know this, but the actor Stephen Root sounds so much like him and sort of has that same kind of glint in his eye and that kind of the same way of talking, that same sort of accent. Stephen Root is obviously a great character actor who you know from so many things. Office Space, King of the Hill, News Radio, Barry is a more recent thing he was in. He's been in a ton of stuff. Anyway, Angel's on parole. And he's got a job at the paper in the archives. So we get a little back and forth between Rockford and Angel. At this point, Angel basically confesses that he did the thing he was convicted of doing, which he always claimed he was innocent in jail. Of course, we know Rockford's always claimed innocence as well. So Angel tries, you know, he says, you know, I did that thing. Did you do that thing you got put in for? And of course, Rockford says, no, I didn't do it. I told you I was innocent. I know I never did that. Angel still doesn't believe him because Angel did. You know, Angel's been lying to him all this time. I guess he thinks maybe Jim has been lying to him. So we get that back and forth, which is fun. It's a little bit of you kind of see a chemistry between them, and it's something that will play out in the future. So I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here because I'm talking about 2 hours of television instead of just one. So I don't want a super long podcast that's just me talking because it, honestly, it's driving me crazy right now, and I'm the one doing the talking. So hopefully you're still with me. If not, then I guess I'm talking to myself. But the focus of the case at this point kind of gets shifted to Las Vegas because Mildred, or Millie, married a man who died supposedly right after the wedding. So Jim and Sarah hop in the Firebird Esprit and go to Vegas. Which in reality is not Vegas at all. It's Victorville, California, which is where this was all shot. They needed a place that was relatively close to Los Angeles and that looked like a desert, and Victorville fits both of those things. Actually, this is the second time during the pilot that Rockford went to quote-unquote Vegas. He goes very early on to talk to the coroner who did the autopsy on Millie's husband to try to figure out the angle there. It was actually at this point my wife loudly proclaimed that coroners don't do autopsies. Medical examiners do. She works for a medical school, so she's always dropping knowledge on me during films or TV shows that feature things that are incorrect. But the coroner's played by Michael Lerner, who is another fantastic character actor. There's so many good character actors and guest stars in the entire series, and you're getting a lot of good ones in the very first episode or pilot. Michael Lerner, he's been in so many things. I can't even like name him, but you recognize his face. And, he plays this character a little on the pervy side, not with Rockford, but immediately when Rockford leaves, he calls Millie on the phone to let her know that someone's digging into the case of her, deceased husband. And he gets really kind of pervy on the phone with her, which I think you're supposed to kind of see. Yeah, this guy is kind of a scuzzball. Scuzzball coroner, which is kind of it's an interesting angle on that. A location note though, the exterior of the Clark County Courthouse is not in Nevada. I don't know where it is, but there's two things that lead me to believe it's not in Nevada. One, there are no other locations in the show that are actually in Nevada that I can see, other than the extremely grainy and dated stock footage of Las Vegas. I mean, some of the stock footage of Vegas is showing cars that I believe are late 50s, early 60s models, at like some of the old downtown casinos in Vegas. And then there's some aerial footage of like the Las Vegas Strip, which is obviously, God, so different now. I mean, there's hotels that have been built and torn down since that footage of Vegas was taken. So that leads me to believe it's not in Vegas. And then the thing that really kind of nailed it down to me is, as there's an establishing shot of the building as Rockford's walking in. There's this sign that says Clark County Courthouse that looks like it's just been plopped down right on the sidewalk. And there's a flagpole in the background. Now, they've tried to frame it out. And, you know, in your 1974 television, you're not going to see that. But you can see almost the entire bottom half of the California flag. The Nevada flag is blue. And the California flag is, of course, white with the red bar, like, on the bottom. And then there's the bear. You don't see the bear, but you definitely see a white flag with a red bar on the bottom. So wherever they shot this was in California somewhere. I don't have the location of that. If you know that, you can also tweet at 853-OKG-Podcast and let me know. So when Jim and Sarah decide to go to Vegas, well, it's sort of a spur-of-the-moment thing. Jim says, you know, get dressed. We're going to Vegas. After some implied sweet, sweet lovemaking, head to Vegas to talk to the wedding chapel minister, try to figure out this whole situation. Exactly. You know, who actually married, Mildred, Millie. Jim's hypothesis is the groom died before the wedding and they needed a replacement so she could actually inherit the old man's money. And she knew Nick's wino father, Harry, or she knew of him because of she knows Nick and the whole story there. She knew his father was a wino. Nobody would miss this guy. Jerry the ape was sent to get the old man, and then the rest is history. And Rockford further surmises that Harry may have been blackmailing Millie for some of that inheritance money. So Jerry and some buddy of his who's driving a nondescript 1974 Plymouth Satellite. Actually, I think you could describe it as just a plain black sedan. Jerry and his buddy get there. They kidnap the minister who has just finished performing a ceremony. They wait, you know, very respectfully outside as he finishes marrying this couple. And then they just basically walk in and take him to their car. So immediately upon kidnapping this guy, the minister decides, well, I'm out of here. He jumps out of the back seat, rolls, and then just takes off running as Jerry pulls out and starts, you know, firing rounds at him. And the way this guy runs, if you watch Seinfeld, if you've ever seen Seinfeld when fake George Steinbrenner, they just show him from behind. I know it's the voice of Larry David, but whoever plays him physically, the one time that the fake George Steinbrenner had to run somewhere, it's just a very odd, high kind of trot with the arms up very high and the body very stiff. That's exactly the way the minister runs. I just find that funny. But that's kind of a whole other aside. So just as all this is going on, Jim and Sarah roll up in the Firebird Esprit and, they see, oh, these are the bad guys. So, Jerry does fire around at the Firebird. Rockford's driving through this motel/wedding chapel courtyard, spins around, comes back out just as the Plymouth is taken off. Something right here, though, that I noticed, and I noticed, you know, obviously I know that James Garner did a lot of his own driving. There's a scene where they're coming up, they're coming up to the wedding chapel, and it's a shot, it's from a camera car. There, you know, there's a camera and lights on the hood of the car. They're just driving down the street. And, of course, Lindsay Wagner's in the car with them. There's a little, I mean, it's not exactly a stunt, but there's a little bit of fast driving and a little bit of a spin in the car with Lindsay Wagner in the car. Now that was pretty cool. And it looked relatively realistic. And I thought that was a nice touch. I don't think they would put, I mean, I know James Garner was a great driver. Obviously Lindsay Wagner, I don't think, you know, you're probably going to have her insurance just for insurance purposes, in too much harm's way. So, I mean, it was a very quick cut. I'm sure it was just a very quick little spin. But I thought it was a nice touch. So as the start Well, let me get to the location before I even get into the rest of this. That wedding chapel was a motel in Victorville, California called the Green Spot. It wasn't called the Green Spot then. I don't know what it was called then. It is called the Green Spot Motel now. It's at 16937 C Street in Victorville, California, if you want to look that up. I found this on the internet. There's a great site that has Rockford Files locations. I need to put the link on the blog. I forgot what it's called. But I knew of this site, and I've seen a lot of the locations on this site for years when I would, you know, want to look something up. But I was trying to find this link. I was trying to find this location myself. Because first I had gone to the page and they were saying, hey, we don't know where this is. We don't know where this location is. We want help. So some of the people who read the blog actually did come up with the answer. But before I found that, I was like, well, they don't know where it is. Maybe I can find it. So I spent hours looking at this footage, stopping it, slowing it down, looking at signs in the background, trying to figure. There's a laundry. You can see it as Jim and Sarah are driving up. There's an old laundry place in the back. I forgot the name of the laundry, but I should have known it. So I was like trying to look that up. I was trying to look up all these things. There's like an auto parts store sign that's literally right across the street, like Valley Auto Center or something, that is right across the street. Well, there happen to be several Valley Auto Centers. Of course, everyone's thinking San Fernando Valley probably, but no, it turns out it's the Victor Valley. And that's why it was very hard for people to find. So I had actually narrowed it down to Victorville based on a sign in the background, that was a bicycle shop. So I found the name of the bicycle shop and that got me to Victorville, but I didn't know where in Victorville. So I decided to go back one more time to that website. And, there I saw that someone else had already solved it. They had the exact address. So, you know, I'm glad I spent 2 hours on that, but I actually enjoyed doing that. So it was not really a big deal to me. So after back to the story, after Sarah and Jim get there, the chase starts. They're chasing the Plymouth. They're heading out of quote unquote Vegas into the desert. I missed this the first time I watched it, but then when I went back and rewatched it before Jerry, heads out to Vegas, he calls that buddy who has the Plymouth and says, you know, I'm going to need a plane, have the plane ready, all this. I didn't really notice that the first time. So he does set that up ahead of time. So he's driving out in the desert to get in this plane. Rockford's chasing him. They get in the plane just before Rockford get there. The plane takes off. Rockford and Sarah, they're driving away. They're talking like, oh, well, I guess they got away. And then now Jerry's got himself a machine gun in the plane, apparently, as the plane comes back, makes a pass, starts shooting. So, you know, Jim kind of tries to tuck the Firebird behind these big rocks. They take off and they hide. And then the plane's making several passes. Jim is shooting his revolver, his Colt Detective Special, at the airplane. The guy in the airplane, Jerry in the airplane, is firing rounds from this machine gun, which causes the Firebird to completely explode because apparently Firebirds are made of 100% gasoline. And another thing it's made of 100% gasoline is this airplane. After Jim shoots it, I think he hits oil starts coming out the side. So oil pressure is dropping. The engine's going to shut down. They're able to land the plane. They get out of the plane. They land the plane perfectly fine. They get out of the plane. They run away from the plane, and the plane literally explodes like it had, dynamite and every other explosive known to man on it. It is completely obliterated, which is, I mean, that's typical of television and movies. It's, you know, makes it exciting. It's fun, but it is kind of funny because, I mean, he shot it in the air. Oil was coming out. Okay, so the engine's going to die. It's not really going to explode into a billion pieces when it lands safely. But anyway, so that happens. And then, this is what they don't tell you. So at this point, the bad guys, they've landed the plane. The plane's blown up. They're now walking down the road. Now, Jim and Sarah somehow have gotten their hands on a cement truck. We don't see how that happened. We're just supposed to say, okay, they got a cement truck somehow. Cement truck pulls up, gets out, you know, turns out it's Rockford. He gets some, puts the bad guys in the back of the cement truck. And the next thing you know, Rockford is in trouble with the police for shooting at an airplane. which is kind of the end of the show. And that made me laugh because that's just, you know, typical kind of silly bureaucracy, whatever. But I had a couple of notes just that I took during the show. I told you I'm really heavy on the production side of things. And there were a couple of things I noticed. I always notice goofs. Usually, I mean, I always look for stuff that I'm just watching, like what's in frame and what's not and what you can see and what you can't. When I first saw this, I was like, is that a wireless microphone pack on William Smith during the scene where he's strangling Harry under the pier? And I was thinking, well, it's 1974. Were they using wireless mics in 1974? And I look it up and they appeared to, like, professional wireless microphones for film and television appear to have come out in the early 70s. Because there's a huge pack that's right, and you can see it on the scenes where he's bent over and you can kind of from behind, right above his belt line, there's this huge pack. He's wearing a very thin yellow shirt. It's very noticeable. And I was like, well, there's obviously his microphone pack. So you can see that. That to me is, you know, it's a goof or it's just a fun, like, production note. And another one that this just kind of bothers me because I feel like the editor should have caught this, or, I mean, when you edit something, because I was a video editor for a living for a while. When you're editing something, I feel like you should pay attention to some of these things. Jerry's got this karate gem, where he's apparently always just doing karate on this big bag, and then that's where Millie knows how to contact him. Oh, you know, he's at the gym, obviously, because he's a big dumb ape. So his karate gem, when we first see him, it's apparently located at the end of the Santa Monica Pier, because that's the establishing shot we get, is it pans over to the pier, to the end of the pier, just randomly, and then, boom, flashes inside to some wood-paneled karate gym that he works at. And then later in the show, they have an establishing shot of this health spa with all these people jogging by it, and it's got the name of a health spa, and then they cut to inside, and it's the same gym. That bothers me. I don't know. I just feel like the editor should have caught that. Why not use the health gym stuff the first time instead of the Santa Monica? I know you're setting it up that it's in Los Angeles, but I don't know. So that was something. And also, I didn't even talk about the fight scene in the theater, with the soap, or Jim threw the soap on the floor. That's actually a theater in Santa Monica that I have walked by so many times, and the building itself is not there anymore, although the facade of the building is still there. It's on Santa Monica Boulevard, right at just, I mean, a block or two from Ocean Avenue. Because we stay around the corner. We will stay at the Georgian Hotel when we go to Santa Monica. It's a really old hotel. It's actually really cool and really nice. So coming around the corner to head towards, you know, say 3rd Street Promenade or whatever, we've walked, and for years this was in construction, where it was literally just the facade of the building being held up by supports, and there was nothing inside of it. Well, they finally have finished the building. It's been for a few years now. It's a shoe store now. But it is kind of cool, though, that they kept the facade of that building. That was an old vaudeville theater for years. It was a vaudeville. It was all kinds of stuff. And it's called the Mayfair Theater, and you can see Mayfair on the name when Jim goes in to the theater. So Jim goes into the Mayfair Theater. He knows he's being followed. He's getting Jerry to come in. Jerry comes in and has a drink, and then Jim goes in the Mayfair Theater bathroom, waits for him to follow him in. Takes him forever. There's soap on the floor. That's the end of really the first part of the two-parter. If you're watching the syndicated version, which is really the only version you can watch, I guess. Anyway, so there's cutaways of Jerry sitting at the bar drinking at the Mayfair Theater, which they later use for Jerry at Gazzari's on the Sunset Strip, which is another location that's not there anymore. It was, ironically, both of those buildings, the Mayfair Theater and Gazzari's on the Sunset Strip, were both heavily damaged during the 1994 Northridge earthquake, which is kind of funny. They're sort of linked in the way in that they use the same cutaway of Jerry inside at the bar for both of those, which that also bothers me. But I guess in 1974, you couldn't pause and rewind your television. It was just on. So you just watched it when it happened, and they'd say, well, nobody's going to notice this. They can't rewind it and watch it again. You know what I mean? So anyway, maybe that's, you know, maybe that's just the way it was. So I feel like I've rambled long enough, and I think you probably agree with me. So I'm gonna call this a podcast. I think maybe it wasn't the best podcast in the world. Yeah, far from it. It was a podcast. I set a completely arbitrary deadline for putting this podcast out on a Friday because I wanted to put it out on Fridays. The show originally aired on Fridays. This show originally aired on a Wednesday that we're talking about today. But normally, The Rockford Files was on Friday nights. When I was a kid, I'd go to my grandma's. I would watch it on Friday nights. And to me, that's kind of where discussion about it should come out on a Friday. Why not? Why I decided to put it out on this Friday, the 22nd of November, I have no idea. I thought if I didn't set a deadline and get it out, because I wanted to do it on Friday, next week is Thanksgiving, and that's not going to happen, let's be honest. So I wanted to get a show out before December, because I've, spent a little time putting this thing together. So I feel like, I think we'll get better. The show will get better. I say we'll. I'm the only person talking. Hopefully, maybe I'll get somebody else on the show. Maybe they can take some of the pressure off of me. I don't know. But I'm boring myself right now. So I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks for watching. Please follow on Twitter, 853OKGPodcast on Twitter. The website is 853OKG.com, which is where the blog is located, which hosts the actual podcast. But the podcast is available on Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Oh, God, there's another one. It's available wherever you get your podcast. Let's just say that. It is available wherever you get your podcast. Please be kind in the comments. No, this is it's something I'm really passionate about and I really like. This is the first time for me to actually host a podcast. I've produced podcasts. I produced a soccer podcast called It's Always Sunny in Soccerdelphia for a few years. Very rarely was I talking on the show. And if I did, it wasn't for the entire length of the podcast. So bear with me while we get this thing worked out. We get the kinks worked out. We're going to wrap this show up. Please subscribe. Come back and listen again when there's another episode, which will be the first actual episode of the Rockford Files. Until then, thanks for listening.